That was the dilemma, really, that I think the four of us really saw it quite differently to one guy, and that was, it is very difficult trying to carry on with something where one person really doesn't want to do it. Hello, Justin Hayward of the Moody Blues here.
And I'm John Lodge, in the studio for the Moody Blues box set.
In 1972, who would you assume could have been considered the most popular rock band in the world? After all, the Rolling Stones were in their Sticky Fingers, Exile on Main Street era, and Led Zeppelin IV and Houses of the Holy were firmly establishing their hard rock reign. But the facts could allow you to make the case for the Moody Blues to be the most popular band on the planet from 1972 to 74. The Moody Blues Seventh Sojourn album, so significant that we've devoted a whole edition of In the Studio just to it, had become the band's first number one seller in the U.S., spending 5 weeks at the top in late 1972. And when, in an attempt to compete with American FM rock stations for this massive audience, U.S. Top 40 radio started playing the five-year-old single Nights in White Satin, it, too, went to number 2 in the States and number 9 in the Moody's home of UK, adding to the mainstream groundswell. The Moody Blues then embarked on a world tour that played practically every continent and lasted a full 2 years. This was the largest tour in entertainment history at the time. And then the Moody Blues disappeared. Arguably, the most popular band in the world took most of the 70s decade off. To find out why, here's Moody Blues singer, songwriter, guitarist Justin Hayward with me in the studio.
Is it safe to say that the Moody Blues broke up, but it just never was officially announced?
I suppose so. We drifted apart because we didn't break up. We just drifted apart. We just didn't make any more plans.
So there was never a band meeting when it was dissolved. You just kind of went your separate way.
I think it was. If you look at it really intelligently and try to be truthful with it, it was the moment when everybody, I think, must have realized that they're probably all of us are going at a different pace. Up until then, I think we were struggling to go at the same pace altogether. And people always assume from the outside that when you're in a group, oh, look, there's those guys, and they're all going along at the same sort of pace. Maybe they've probably got their disagreements and blah, 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 but really they're all of one mind there, all in a little line going along, you know. But of course you're not really. And I think now we've come to realise that. And we're certainly not now even, but I hope it's accepted by everyone that life isn't like that. You know, no group of people can ever be like that. It'd be really odd if they did, you know.
It's funny.
I've never seen a rock and roll group that's ever been like that.
By the end of 1972, the album Seventh Sojourn had hit the top of the American album charts, becoming the Moody's first ever number one album in the States. But at the same time, the single, Nights in White Satin, which the Moody's had released 4.5 years earlier, was in the midst of a grassroots resurgence started by radio DJs in America. Amazingly, the album's Days of Future Past and Seventh Sojourn were both perched in the top 5 at the very same time, something that's never been accomplished except once before in pop music history. And yet, as Justin Hayward of the Moody Blues recounts, the band was unable to really enjoy their amazing accomplishment.
For me personally and for everyone in the band, it was a very unhappy time because I think that the years preceding that, from about 1970, when we really achieved what I suppose looking back now you'd call sort of mega stardom, particularly in America, where there's a number of other groups coming through. We were just probably before Led Zeppelin, but Led Zeppelin were were coming with us, and then there was a number of other groups. We'd become more enclosed and sort of closeted, you know, with private planes, limos everywhere. There was no one. It was a very close sort of circle. It's very hard to get into that circle. And I was 19 when I joined the band, and through this period of my life, I'd done all of my growing up in the band, and I didn't have any life. I didn't actually have a life as I didn't exist as a person.
Seventh Sojourn successfully wrapped up the second musical era of the Moody Blues, and with its number one selling popularity, the band mounted a massive 9-month-long world tour that extended all the way into 1974. With hindsight, it's no wonder that when the band members attempted then to record a follow-up to Seventh Sojourn, truth be told, it would be 5 long years before the Moody Blues would ever be able to record again. But the Sojourn had come to an end for at least one band member, founding keyboard player, songwriter Mike Pinder. In looking back at the cost of success, Justin Hayward sees the Seventh Sojourn period with some ambivalence. Justin Hayward describes living in a post-Moody Blues world for the first time in his adult life.
Yeah, I think it was wasn't particularly happy time for me. I was making quite a few sort of mistakes around my life at that time, but it was difficult for us within the band, because I think there was the old sort of chestnut about, you know, have you kind of overstayed your welcome? And I think that nobody was expected to have careers that in rock that lasted longer than about 3 years, really. Mm-hmm. And we'd already done kind of 6 or 7 by that time. And I don't know, you're sort of questioning whether you've sort of outstayed your welcome or whether, or what else you're going to do in your life, and a lot of those questions. I think looking back now, though, I've realized this over the last, sort of finally admitted it to myself, really. I think the biggest problem of the lot, really, that you kind of have to go public with, and I'm going to, was that we were really carrying one guy who really didn't want to do it. And that was a pretty sort of destructive thing that probably made the rest of us pretty unhappy, really, because it was led to a lot of kind of divisiveness and behind the sort of scenes stuff going on within the group. And Mike Pinder, our keyboard player, he really just didn't want to do it. And I think he wanted the group to finish probably before Seventh Sojourn, actually. But we made Seventh Sojourn. I think it's a beautiful album, Seventh Sojourn.
It's a beautifully
crafted album, and it's the height of us in that particular. It's as far as you could go with that particular type of recording technique. After that, there was nowhere else. You know, you had to sort of stop and rethink it. But so I think that was the dilemma that we got to, and that was the sort of ultimate stumbling block that we got to in February 74. I mean, sounds very serious, but of course it wasn't the end of the world or anything, but that was the dilemma, really, that I think the four of us really saw it quite differently to one guy, and it is very difficult trying to carry on with something where one person really doesn't want to do it.
But John Lodge says there was a silver lining in that dark blue cloud.
The pressure was off. You know, the Moody Blues were so big, huge, and, you know, it's not just the band and us. It's all the people that your life was affecting, not just the people who are buying the music, listening to it, and fans who wanted to go to the concerts, but people who were like third party, who their whole livelihood was based on your life of creating music. And people would come up and say, you've got to make a record or my house goes back. I mean, these are the type of things that people were saying. Yeah. And I remember that being incredible pressure. Mm. And but I think when that had gone, it just left us just going one thing only, and that was to go exactly how Days of Future Past was made. No pressure, just make our music. And I think that's where Blue Jays came from. And who do we want to use? How do we want to do it? And we just built our own Westlake Audio Studio in London, and it was just beautiful to get in there and just record this album.
As the dawn is breaking on your future, my child, is the love you love alive? If every door you open closes on me, I don't know if I can survive. I don't know if I can survive.
night, the poor tormented soul is searching for the light. This morning I opened my eyes, I knew from the silence that something was wrong. Turning I realized I wanted to cry, but I knew I was alone. But where will you go, and who will be your guide? And which way will you turn, the water lies so wide? Did I never told you, though you'll never really know, I need a song. The sun is rising on your freedom, my child, is the dawn of your love alive. And every door you open closes on me, I don't know if I can survive. Knowing part of your love was lying. Long is the road that takes you. Sleepless are the hours, and lonely is the night. Poor tormented soul, searching for the light. The moment I opened my eyes, I knew from the silence that something was wrong. Turning, I realized I wanted to cry, but I knew I was alone. But where will you go, and who will be your guide? And which way will you turn, the water's hard so wide? Did I never told you, though you will never really know, I need you so.
After almost 5 long years apart, the Moody Blues convened in 1978 to make their comeback album, Octave. But the rock world had experienced a fundamental binge and purge while they were away.
You realized what you were up against internally. Tony Clark, your longtime producer, splits in the middle of the sessions because of the tension. Mike Pinder, a founding member of the Moody Blues, splits because of the tension. So you were more than aware of your internal challenges. Were you aware of what was going on in popular music at the time?
Absolutely, yeah. We were right in the middle of it. I think the Blue Jays album and then our own solo albums probably put us closer to what was going on in the music in music scene in general than we'd ever been before, because we were working with some of the greatest musicians, the best producers, the most interesting other vocalists and players, you know, and we were having, instead of having the shelter of the Moody Blues to surround us, you know, to shield us, we were out there on our own having to answer for ourselves and being exposed to it. So I think we were more than aware of what was going on. I was personally quite very glad. I thought the whole music business needed that kick up the arse that really the whole punk thing gave it, really. And the more that went on, the more room it seemed to allow us, actually, in a strange way, yeah. Mm.
While everyone was looking that way, we came from somewhere else, which we did with Days of Future Past.
Exactly. You know. Yeah.
The summer sun is fading as the year grows old, and darker days are drawing near. Winter winds will be much colder now you're not here. I watch the birds fly south across the autumn sky, and one by one they disappear. I wish that I was flying with them. Now you're not here. Like the song through the trees, you came to love me. Like a leaf on a breeze, you blew away. Through autumn's golden gown, we used to kick our way. You always loved this time of year. Those fallen leaves lie undisturbed now, 'cause you're not here. 'Cause you're not here. 'Cause you're not softly on my weary eyes, as if to hide a lonely tear.
my life will be forever autumn. Cause you're not here. 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 Cause you're not here.
On 1978's Jeff Wayne's War of the Worlds rock opera. When Justin returns with John Lodge, they'll relay how the Moody Blues went from dysfunctional back to number one.
I'm Justin Hayward of the Moody Blues.
And I'm John Lodge of the Moody Blues.
Welcome back to In the Studio, and now back to Redbeard.
Thanks again, gentlemen. It's a pleasure. One of the greatest benefits to being a modern touring musician is opportunity to travel and experience the differences and the similarities of cultures around the world. Here's Justin Hayward of the Moody Blues.
You know, I've learned the importance of music, and I've also learned the triviality of music. You know, it's wonderful, it makes us all feel great, but it's probably just above ice cream in the level of sort of importance. But it does have the, or and, I should say, it does have the capacity to make the world a better place, more so than any other thing, entity, person, medium I've ever known in my whole life. That's why it is so wonderful. As a European, as I am, you know, I know that music was more responsible than any politician's voice, no matter what anybody says, in breaking down the barriers between the part of Europe that I live in and the part of Europe that my neighbours live in. And the Voice of America and the British Broadcasting Corporation and those people that were beaming, well, maybe their own kind of rock and roll, you know, into the East, made the difference. I swear, their generation grew up and was changed because of music. And so it does know no barriers.
He told me where a river
Severing ties with original Moody's member Mike Pinder and longtime producer Tony Clark during the recording of the 1978 Octave album was traumatic but necessary for the band's survival, according to Justin Hayward, followed by John Lodge of the Moody Blues.
I think we came out of this period the other side of it after the solo albums, making an album that really was incredible. I mean, if you thought Seventh Sojourn was painful, I mean, Octave was doubly kind of painful, and it was a triumph, you know, the human ingenuity that the thing ever got done, you know, really. When I listened back, particularly to some of the things on Time Traveller from Octave, I can feel that the pain of a lot of them. But in that pain is a tremendous kind of beauty around it, and it's leading to some of the most beautiful and interesting things I think that we ever did. You know,
it was, you know, we mentioned earlier the Moody Blues is this one person, this one whatever it is one entity. And I think in the Octave album we were forcing that back to life. And I think that's what the album was about for me. We were actually forcing that back to life. We knew it was there. We knew it was in there. And it was a case of looking after it, cultivating it, working it, digging a bit harder than you would normally have to. It wasn't that there was a desert there at all. There was abundance of new life waiting to come out. But it was, may have been exactly the wrong time, the wrong place, who knows. But we knew what we were trying to achieve.
Album in 1981, Long Distance Voyager, contained a top 20 hit, The Voice, putting the Moody Blues back into familiar territory near the top of the charts. Here's John Lodge with Justin Hayward.
And I think when we did Long Distance Voyager, it was the only album we ever recorded as the Moody Blues in our own studio. That was a real plus because we had the state-of-the-art studio. I mean, the sounds just sounded so good, and it was a quad studio. So we were listening to everything in quad, and it was just a beautiful sound as we were doing. You know, you have to have the songs first, but I think we'd been on tour. We'd toured for a year previous to making the album, so we were playing really well. We knew what we wanted to do. We had the songs, and then it was just a case then of getting into the studio and doing it. It was just wonderful to, you know, the playback at the end of the album, to listen to it and know it was there.
Well, it was a lot easier, yeah. It was a lot easier, yeah, because the four of us really wanted to do it. You were left with four people who really had the same kind of purpose. But apart from that, I just think the songs were brilliant, personally.
It really was becoming difficult because Justin and I wrote a song a lot later. It actually came a long-distance Voyager called Gemini Dream. And I think, you know, this period of time, for me, was the beginning of that Gemini Dream, where we really were this two-person, you know, where you was this person on stage and everything was yours, you know. Everything you wanted. But then there was this other person, yourself, who was saying, just a moment, I am an ordinary person, I'm a normal person, and I'm doing these other things that I really enjoy, and I really want to try and communicate this other part of me. And I think in this set 1974 period, the confusion between the two had got to a point where one had to give.
Long time, no see. Tonight.
garage song Gemini Dream helped propel the Moody Blues album Long Distance Voyager into the number one seller in America in August 1981. Listening to four decades of Moody's music back to back, it's truly remarkable how consistent their musical vision has remained regardless of trend or fashion. Here's Moody Blues singer, songwriter, guitarist Justin Hayward with me in the studio.
At least we've been number one. Without being outrageous. So, you know, it's the larger-than-life things that happen in this world. But that's why we've made a point of never, you know, following any trend or any fashion and just doing our own music and trusting our own judgment and doing what we wanted to do. And we've been under a lot of pressure always to compromise. We've never given in to that pressure.
Heart and soul took control. Took control of me. Paid my dues, spread the news. Hands across the sea. Put me down, turn me round. Turn me round to see. Marble halls, open doors. Someone found the key. And it's only sight and sound, human symphony. Heard the voice, had no choice, needed to be free. Fly me high, touch the sky, left the earth below. Heard the line, saw the sign, knew which way to go. 'Cause it's easier to easier to try.
Justin Hayward written and sung Blue World appears originally on 1983's Moody Blues title, The Present. It turns out that the Moodys are unique in another way as well. Here's Justin Hayward.
I always envied groups that we knew, like The Who were mates, you know, and they had this guy called Bill Kerbishley. He was a great manager. We never had a manager. And I always envied people that did have good managers that would really take care of things for them. And we always managed ourselves. But at least in doing that, we made our own mistakes and we could take responsibility for it. You know, at least we could say, well, it was our idea.
Moody Blues bass player John Lodge.
I think, you know, we were there as well with everyone else. I mean, we were looking for lofty things as well. I mean, we were searching just like everyone else because we all came all through the same period of time as everyone else with us, you know, then. And the world was expanding and opening up so quickly. There were so many things bombarding us, so many religions, so many things that were going on. But at the same time, that the two things that really hit me, that when you're actually standing on stage in a pair of jeans and a T-shirt, you know, that's what I am. I'm from a 15-year-old rock and roller. You know, I just want to say I am a singer in a rock and roll band. And then as soon as I sort of thought about that, I suddenly realised that all the other things fell into place.
In your wildest dreams.
Your Wildest Dreams from The Other Side of Life album, confounding all doubters as to the Moody's viability in an MTV world back then. The video to Your Wildest Dreams copped Billboard's Video of the Year award. Lest the millions of fans who had discovered the Moody Blues via MTV should think of the band as a singles outfit, Justin Hayward reminds us that the Moody's are truly the fathers of progressive rock.
I know that we were, you know, we did get very arty with the whole thing and the whole concept business. And there were some albums that we never even released a single from. We never deliberately made singles. We would just make albums and album tracks. And we never discouraged that idea of ourselves. But it was a great time. It was a great intellectual time as well. And those days are gone. I don't think they'll ever come back again. They might do, but I'd be surprised.
I know you're out there somewhere, somewhere, somewhere. I know I'll find you somehow, and somehow I'll return again. Is lifting slowly, I can see the way, and I've left behind the empty streets that once inspired my life, and the strength of the emotion is like thunder in the air, 'cause the promise that we made each other haunts me to the end. I know you're out there somewhere. Searching for in everyone I meet, and the times I've been mistaken, it's impossible to say, and the grass is growing underneath our feet. I know you're out there somewhere, somewhere, somewhere. Somewhere you can hear my voice. I know I'll find you somehow, somehow, somehow. I know I'll find you somehow, and somehow I'll return again to you.
Of a whole generation was involved. The Moody Blues were the voice for a lot of people, and for a lot of people's feelings were summed up in our songs. But it was happening everywhere. There was as an intellectually stimulating era, which from 1966 to 1970, there's never been an equal for me. But I don't know, there was suddenly a collective sort of consciousness amongst all of young people, and that free papers that were being given away on the street, and the writing of people, and Rolling Stone magazine, Oz magazine in England, the intellectual like stuff that was, and enlightening stuff that was going down, was fantastic. Like I say, it was like a collective consciousness somehow grabbing hold of a whole generation.
That I remember.
that there's none so blind as those who will not see. And to those who lack the courage and say it's dangerous to try, well, they just don't know that love eternal will not be denied. I know you're out there somewhere, somewhere, somewhere. I know you're out there somewhere, somewhere. Turning to the fountain of our youth. And if you wake up wondering, in the darkness I'll be there. My arms will close around you and protect you with the truth. I know you're out there somewhere, somewhere, somewhere. I know you're out there somewhere, somewhere you can hear my voice. I know I'll find you somehow, somehow, somehow. I know I'll find you somehow, and somehow I'll return again to you.
This is Redbeard in the Studio, thanking my guests John Lodge and Justin Hayward. In the Studio is written and produced by yours truly, Redbeard, for Bearded Fish Productions. Copyright 2012, all rights reserved. Transcription by Jane Carpenter Brune. Theme song by Andy Timmons. Follow In the Studio on Facebook and hear lots more from the biggest names in rock at inthestudio.net.